Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever and whenever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in and listening to the 33rd Scottish Field Podcast, released on Wednesday, the 19th of January, 2022, our first of the year. Thanks for joining us today. My name's Kenny Smith, and I'm the web editor of Scottish Field. And over the next 25 minutes or so, I'll be telling you all about our latest issue, as well as meeting our guest, actor Ian Robertson, who's currently hosting a TV show as he rambles across Scotland, literally and figuratively. Every month, Scottish Field brings you the best of all things Scottish: heritage and interiors, antiques, gardens, wildlife, motoring, whiskey, and country news, as well as interviews with famous Scots names. In our February 2022 edition, we dangle from Scotland's sea cliffs with rock climbing enthusiast Guy Robertson, and we meet one of the hardest working women on Tyree, local crofter Rhoda Meek, who has taken on Airbnb. We chat with Perthshire's Michael Yellowlees, who, with his four-legged friend Luna, completed a 5,000-mile trek across Canada to raise money for charity, and we also ask if the real Macbeth would please stand up. Having been made out to be a villainous, tyrannical king, we discover there was much more to Macbeth, and indeed Lady Macbeth, than meets the eye. Brother and sister duo James and Irene Thompson were ready to tackle the challenge of a wild garden in Fife, and we take a look at transforming a former church officer's house in Glasgow, and we discover that it was worth every drop of blood, sweat and tears. Underwater photographer Jill Williams reveals the otherworldly wonders that lie beneath the waves in the Isle of Skye, while the A-listed Balbirnie House Hotel in Fife is a fine dining destination and an extraordinary wedding venue, which are investigated by the Mystery Diner. We also meet Glasgow-based artist Lily McRae, who has created unique works inspired by the old masters. In our Credo column, Graham McTavish, the Hobbit and Outlander actor, talks road trip playlists, thankless jobs, and Shakespearean tragedies. This month, we also feature Scottish Field's Independent Schools Guide, an ideal companion if you're looking for somewhere to send your children. In our regular columns, we mere mortals may not agree in everything, but Alexander McCallsmith believes kindness goes a long way. The recent snowstorm reminds Guy Grieve of an Arctic adventure many moons ago. Travelling during COVID is worrying, and Fiona Armstrong has a tale to tell about the clan chief's recent escapades. Motoring expert Neil Linden has a hard time choosing between the Audi Q4 e-tron and the Skoda Enyaq. And Michael Wiggins' fascination with salmon continues as they migrate from the ocean to inland waters. All this and much more is in the latest edition of Scottish Field, priced £4.75. To find out how to subscribe, just visit www.scottishfield.co.uk/subscriptions. This week, our guest is Ian Robertson. Last year, you may have seen him appearing in two episodes of Ian Robertson Rambles, in which he tackled the West Highland Way. Now, the show has returned with a new six-part series. This time, Ian takes on two long-distance walks. First off, it's the daunting 215-mile challenge of the Southern Upland Way. Trekking Scotland from the west coast to the east, he sets off from Portpatrick in Dumfries and Galloway with actor Joe McFadden for company. Later in the series, he takes on an extended version of the Speyside Way, from source to sea, and tacking on a stretch of the Murray Coast Trail. We join Ian as he rambles his way through some of the most stunning scenery Scotland has to offer. In the series, he treats us to his unique and irreverent perspective and shares the sights and hidden gems he discovers, including remote and charming Bothers, including remote and charming Bothies, and some diversions off the beaten track. So, let's meet this week's guest.
My name is Ian Robertson, the Rambling Torag.
That sounds like a book title straight away.
To accompany the series. Ian Robertson, yeah. Ian Robertson, the Rambling Torag. Or I might even, seeing as I'm from Govan, I might call it the Walking Ned.
That works as well. I really like that. Fantastic. Well, welcome to the Scottish Field Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me along.
Could you maybe tell us a wee bit about how your love of walking and rambling, in a physical sense, not a talking sense, came about?
Yeah, well, the rambling in the physical sense from the gub is just comes naturally. I've always had a dog. So my dog Lightning, who lived to about 23, believe it or not, you know, obviously I was out with her every single day. And then about 5 years ago, Lightning died. I mean, when she got to about 18, I thought I must come to terms with the fact that this dog might not be too long for this world. And so, you know, when she was 23, it was kind of like, oh, come on, hen. So she did really well. And I tried to keep doing the walks, you know, going to the parks that I went to with her. And, you know, as I always say, you feel a bit of a creep when you're a middle-aged, grey-haired man walking around the park yourself with a dog. So I thought, well, maybe I'll try this. You know, some friends had often tried to get me on the hills and things like that. And I think I did something like, you know, Connick Hill. And then Colin McCready saw on Twitter that I'd done it. He and I went to Ben Ann, and then we started doing Munro's. And you know, I caught the bug. And it was interesting. I think after about a month or so, I noticed that I started to get my hill walking legs. You know, that thing where you just, where, you know, a month earlier, it was, I suddenly was able to, you know, it was coming to me naturally. My body had adapted. And so that's really where it started. Yeah, it was the death of a dog inspired me to go further afield and get on the hills.
Yeah. So before the first TV series came about, what sort of places had you been to climb in?
Well, I mean, done a lot of, you know, a lot of hills, really, a lot of Munro's, Ben Lomond. Colin and I had an attempt at Ben Vane, I think we did, when there was still snow at the top, and we reached a certain point, we thought, right, that's enough. So we did go back in the better weather and conquer it. So really lots of hills and some low-level walks, you know, like the Glenloyne Loop is brilliant at Arica. So long as you don't get a parking ticket at Arica, they're very, very good at slapping fines on you up there nowadays, you know, if you're going up to do the cobbler, which I did do the cobbler, but I didn't thread the needle because I like being alive. I think I took up the hill walking, and I discovered very quickly that I have vertigo, which was quite interesting. I actually was in Spain, in Gran Canaria, when it kicked in. My sister lives in Las Palmas, and I'd hired a car to, you know, there were these amazing caves up in the hills where, you know, people would have lived. And, you know, I drove up and a beautiful view. Thought, oh, I must stop and get a look at this view. And I'm fine so long as I look straight out. But I looked down and the vertigo was, the fear was immense, and I ended up on my hands and knees. And I thought, I'm going to have to crawl off this hill on my hands and knees. I can't stand up. And eventually I got in the car and I was okay. But when I got to the caves, I got it again. And I discovered it's when I looked down. And occasionally I get that in a hill, like a, you know, like Ben Nevis. I can look out of the view and it's astonishing. But there are certain crevices or places where you can see a sheer rock. And that's, and I think, I don't know, maybe it's, I feel like I've, you know, I reach middle age. And it's as if my body has gone, you know what, actually, this is the only one you've got. And and those sheer drops I don't fancy. So, you know, I'm someone with vertigo, but, I, you know, I still climb plenty of hills. It's not the, it's not being at a height that gives me the vertigo. It's when I look down at a sheer drop.
That's fascinating, because I pretty much have the same up. So I feel your pain. I feel your pain. So how did the first run of the TV show come about?
So I had a plan that summer that me and some friends were going to shoot a film. And it didn't happen. You know, we were all about the democratization of film, and we had enough kit, we were just going to go and do it. And then that kind of fell through, and I thought, well, I know what I'll do. I'll go and walk the West Highland Way. And I'd had two failed attempts in my youth. I once did it with a youth theatre. Got to Bridge of Orkney and thought, I better go home because I'm going to end up murdering someone. You know, that doing a walk like that with people that maybe you're not, you haven't clicked with, you know, and there were a lot of whinging going on and things like that. And I thought, no, this is... And then about a year later, I tried it myself from Fort William to Glasgow. And I got to the tip of Loch Lomond, you know, at kind of Abloy, you know, where the Ben Glass campsite is, and thought, no, I'm done. I didn't have the right kit, and my bag was sitting on my skew whiff, and all the weight was going on my left knee. And I'd done so many hills and things. I knew I had the fitness. I knew I could do it. And I thought, I'm going to go and do the West Highland Way. And I had a great time planning my itinerary and thought, no, I'll go kayaking that day and I'll go and see the wallabies and the island. I'll go up Ben Lomond and I'll do this and I'll do that. And I sent it to a bunch of pals and said to people they were welcome to join me for the whole walk or days or things like that. And Stephen Duffy, who played my brother on Small Faces, joined me in the first day, 20 miles from Mulgay to Balmahar. And we were just shooting on the GoPro and things, wee clips to put up, that I was going to put up on social media. And I was literally editing the clips on my phone, you know, and either in my digs or in my tent, and posting, you know, 2 minutes on maybe Twitter or a minute up on Instagram. And then people were really engaging. I was getting messages from people saying, I can't wait for the next clip. I can't wait to see this. So I started talking a wee bit to camera. And if you watch the first series, you'll notice in the first episode, there's a lot of voiceover. And in the second episode, I talk more to camera because friends and people on the internet were engaging with me. So that was great fun. And I remember coming home and thinking, oh, I should have done that for a charity because it got such good engagement. I could have raised a few bob for a charity. And then that footage all sat languishing on my computer. And during lockdown, I had to do a monologue for River City. And I knew that Gavin Smith, the commissioner, was quite happy with it. And I got in touch with him and said, hey, I've got a load of footage from when I walked the West Highland Way last year. I don't suppose you'd be at all interested in it. And he came back and he said, I'll have a look, Ian, you know, because it's you. But I'll just say straight off the bat, it'll probably be a no because we get pitched the West Highland Way all the time and it's just a guy doing a walk, you know. So we cut all the 2 minute clips together from the whole walk and sent them to him. And then he came back and said, do you think you've got enough footage for two or three episodes? Alistair Smith, who edited it all and produced the show, he literally was squeezing blood out of stone in that first series. Every inch of footage was used, especially on Ben Nevis. I think the drone only went up for about 5 minutes. And, when you watch the show, it looks like there are five or six great drone shots, but that was one very brief flight where Alistair has used every little bit he can. So that was very organic, which was great. And off the back of that, they gave us this commission, where there's two more walks. And we came back with the opposite problem this time. We had too much footage. because, you know, I was just making social media clips and I knew I needed about 2 minutes a day. Whereas when we were making a show, we ended up, I think, some of the days in the Southern Upland Way, we had about 25 minutes worth of good usable footage. That's just from the GoPro that we somehow had to whittle down. I mean, episode one, the Southern Upland Way covers 8 days. So you think about it, 8 days getting condensed into 28 minutes, that doesn't leave, you know, it's what, 3 minutes a day really, you know? So that was hard, cutting all that down. So it was hard the first time trying to stretch footage that didn't exist, and then in the second series trying to condense the footage down and still tell a story at the same time and still convey all the highlights and the lows of the walk, you know?
As you've done in this run at Southern Uplands, as you mentioned, and the Speyside Way, what were the highlights from those? And indeed, were there any lowlights as well?
Yeah, I mean, the lows, I'll just say straight off the bat, anyone that's seen anything I do knows that I hate walking on tarmac. So that's always the low. And on both of those walks, there's the big stretches, especially, the Speyside Way is getting extended. There's an official extension from Newton Moor, Newton Moor to Abbeymoor, because obviously I did a longer walk starting in Glenroy. But that Newton Moor section seems to be predominantly on pavement. I think there's a thing happening now where in order for them to pull down funding for these kinds of walks, they have to be accessible for bikes and prams and wheelchairs. So they're maybe not as off the beaten track, these extensions that are happening. The tarmac is a great low. I don't enjoy it. And I mean, on the Speyside Way, just straight off the bat, being in Glenroy and seeing the parallel roads, because I kind of read about them and we talked about them, but you just don't really get the picture of what they are until you see them and go, it really does look like roads have been carved out of the hillside. So that first day was just incredible, being in Glenroy, because we're doing a kind of source to see version. So starting at Turret Bridge in Glenroy so that we can see, you know, the Loch Spey, which obviously feeds the river as you go. And that's amazing to think, this tiny wee, you know, loch, I mean, it's only about 300 metres, I think, feeds that, you know, one of the fastest flowing rivers in the United Kingdom. So that was amazing. On the Speyside Way, the Bowfiddle Rock is just, hands down for me, one of the greatest sites in Scotland. And it is funny with the walk. I find the walks can be anticlimactic. I certainly found that with the West Highland Way, you know, skirting around Ben Nevis is astonishing at the end, but coming into Fort William is very anticlimactic. You know, you kind of feel like there should be 30 or 40 people waiting on you and cheering you or something. So I tacked on Ben Nevis, which I think if you're going to do the West Highland Way, you should always tack on Ben Nevis, because it's not anticlimactic like coming down into the fort is. The Southern Upland Way has this beautiful bit before the end, Cove, which is just gorgeous, and they say it's the spiritual end of the walk. It's just off the walk. That was beautiful. But for some reason that I would never be able to figure out, the powers that be that planned a coast-to-coast walk starting in the gorgeous town of or village of Port Patrick on the west coast, then have it ending on the east coast a mile and a half inland in Coburn's Path. And again, Coburn's Path feels very anticlimactic because it's just this statue that I think was, it was when one of the English kings married a Scottish princess, so it's got rose and thistles carved into it. But it's anticlimactic, there's no doubt about it. Cove feels like where it should end, but it doesn't. However, the Speyside Way, because I tacked on a bit of the Murray Firth, the Murray Coast Trail, and I ended in Cullen, and sea coming down off the kind of cliffs and passing and coming into Cullen Beach. That was a glorious end to a walk. And, you know, I took my boots off and waded through the surf of the North Sea coming in on the beach. And that, of the three that I've filmed, that is the best finish I've ever had to one of the walks. So that was a huge highlight. And I suppose the other highlight, this is ridiculous to say, because we'd been in lockdown and we'd all been stuck in the house, the other highlight was being out and about in Scotland and stuffing my face with some of the finest food I've ever had in my life. And other people cooking for me. There was food brought to my table by other human beings. It was astonishing.
I was about to say, where did this fit into with the whole sort of post-lockdown world when we were able to get out and about again? I'd imagine this is automatically inbuilt social distancing in it as well.
Yes, that's a wee bit hard, because I watched last night's episode when it went out, and the rule at the BBC is 2 metres. You know, we've got to keep 2 metres apart at all times. And I was watching one of the clips and I thought, oh, I hope people watching this don't think me and my pal have fallen out or are in a grump with each other because there's 2 metres between us the whole time. We filmed the Speyside Way, I think, April, and then we filmed the Southern Upland Way. Although they've gone out the other way, we filmed the Southern Upland Way in July. And in April, things were just beginning to ease a little bit. We have added restrictions at the BBC, which is to maintain 2 metres at all times. So it was quite, but I remember after being in the lockdown, when myself and Alistair Smith, the producer, was there, because he now is getting, you know, kind of walking by shots that, you know, with me walking through shot without the GoPro on the go all the time. And Alistair, myself, we had a runner, and Colin McCready was with us. And we having been in that lockdown, we just felt this huge sense of privilege to be on the hills and in a place like this. And the weather was glorious. And you just think we're the luckiest people in the world to be out on these hills. And it was nice because as I went along, you were meeting people who were feeling the same as us. They were back out in the hills and really enjoying it.
I think that's the great things that with so many of us, we haven't really travelled that far despite things having lifted. And it's so fantastic just to see the great outdoors in its full splendour and glory once again. And we can sort of live it vicariously and through yourself. So thank you for that.
Well, it's a pleasure. And a friend of mine, Mark Thompson, who used to run the Lyceum, was on the phone recently because, Bill Bryden, the director, we knew had passed away. And we were having it, and he said that because of the restrictions, and obviously a lot of people aren't wanting to go abroad, you know, the hoops you have to jump through, he's explored in Scotland. And he was saying, I was down, I saw this great place, St Mary's Loch. And I said, I was wild swimming in there. And he says, I went to this place, Glen Elg. And I said, yeah, my father's people are from there, because Arnisdale, just past Glen Elg is where my father spent first couple of years of his life when my granny's people came over from Egg. We were in Arnisdale before they came further afield. Actually, my Auntie Mary, who grew up in Arnisdale, is in episode 4, the Speyside Way, because the walk that we decided to do kicks off very close to the croft that she lives on. So it was nice after lockdown. That was a great excuse, on the BBC's dime, go up and visit my Auntie Mary, who turns up in the show because Mary's 99.
Wow.
And living up at a croft up in that neck of the woods. And that for me was important because one of the things about the show is the friendships are all very genuine. I'm walking with real, it's not celebrity of the week kind of thing. It's genuine old pal that I'm rebonding with and sharing times with on the hills. And it is very personal to me, in the West Highland Way, I went through where my father grew up. And so this was important because my father Mary's really a granny to me. And I was taken up there my whole life in the summer and running around because Mary was a housekeeper up on Monarch of the Glen, the shot.
Oh, yeah.
At Verrickey Estate, which the walk that we've done kind of passes just slightly north of all of that, lagging and stuff. So that was great, and great to see Mary and that she's still with us and she's still going strong. And I think she's absolutely determined that she's going to get that birthday card from the Queen.
Good on her. Perfect. Well, Ian, thank you so much for your time and sharing
absolute
a bit
pleasure.
Of your journeys with us. And long may you continue. Keep on trampling up those hills.
Keep on trudging, that's what I say. Just get into it. You'll not regret it.
Fantastic. Thanks again. Speak to you soon. Cheers.
Cheers, Kenny. Thank you.
Huge thanks to Ian, who played Lex in cult Glasgow film Small Faces, Gash in Ramsay Nesbitt, and is currently Stevie O'Hara in River City. You can find Ian Robertson Rambles on BBC Scotland and BBC iPlayer. Talking of all things online, you can follow Scottish Field on our social media. You can find us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/Scottish Field. We have a Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Scottish Field, or you can see our Instagram page at www.instagram.com/Scottish Field Mag with MAG at the end. And of course, you can pop by our website www.scottishfield.co.uk, which contains unique content that you won't find in the print magazine, as well as links to purchase the magazine online in physical and digital formats. That's all we've got time for this week, but we'll be back very soon with another episode of the Scottish Field Podcast. Be seeing you.